Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Stories We Cannot Tell by Leslie A. Rasmussen, narrated by Alexandra Kohler. What we once enjoyed and deeply loved, we can never lose, for all that we love deeply becomes part of us. Helen Keller. Chapter 1. Rachel. It had been an exceptionally warm February in Los Angeles, but for the last 4 hours, rain had been drumming on the windows of Rachel's classroom, leaving her no choice but to keep her kindergarten students inside for both recess and lunch. The caged-in 5-year-olds were bouncing off the walls like tennis balls from a high-speed launcher someone forgot to turn off. Rachel worked in an upscale private school, the kind of place where kids would bring sushi for lunch instead of a turkey sandwich. She loved her students, except when they forgot to take their lunchbox home on Fridays. "Only 2 more pickups to go before all the kids are gone and my weekend begins," Rachel thought as she erased the chalkboard and put books back in the bookshelf. She was in a hurry to get home today, knowing what was waiting for her there. 30 minutes after the last child was gone, Rachel sat cross-legged on her bathroom floor holding a small box in her hand. A box with pink and blue and pluses and minuses on it. A box containing something that would decide if she was having a good day or another bad one. She ripped the cardboard from the middle and pried the stick out. Rachel hated peeing on that thing. Would the stream hit it exactly right? Would she accidentally drop it in the toilet and have to start over? Every month, that hateful little stick monster would betray her and Brett. Months ago, she stopped feeling a rush of butterflies when her period was late. Like a cruel joke, she'd run out to buy a test only to get her period the next day, and it didn't help that her cycle was irregular. Some months it was 29 days, some months 32, and some months 36. Why couldn't she be 28 days like the rest of her friends? The friends who had children already. At this rate, they would have an empty nest before her womb was full. She pulled down her black pants and her shocking pink panties and sat on the toilet. She held the stick between her legs and felt a rush of warmth. She waited until she was sure nothing else would come out, never knowing if the last drop would be the drop that would tell the stick she was pregnant. Rachel pulled her clothes back on and put the test on the counter and set a timer for 3 minutes. She turned her back. She wondered if a watched stick would come up pregnant. She wanted to be pregnant so badly, it was all she could think about for what seemed like forever. She couldn't wait to watch Brett hold his child. She knew that even when they were dating, he'd be a wonderful father. The two of them finally creating the family they'd been dreaming about. Please let this test come out positive. Rachel stopped herself from turning around while the stick was hatching results. She used to use these 3 minutes to pray to God to help her get pregnant, but she stopped when it didn't work. As a kid, her prayers for a Barbie dream house, or later for Stephen Parker to ask her out, never materialized either. She decided to try prayer again because now she wondered if God thought she stopped believing. Rachel began speaking Hebrew, or at least the little bit she remembered from her bat mitzvah. She stopped mid-sentence. What if I'm mispronouncing the words and God doesn't understand me, she thought. What if I've been praying for no baby instead of a baby? Rachel didn't want to make things worse, although she wasn't sure that was possible. The timer dinged and Rachel caught her breath. She slowly turned, but instead of walking over to the counter, she stayed where she was and squinted. She couldn't see if the test had 2 lines. Her legs trembled and wouldn't move. It was as if her heels had grown roots that went through the floor. This is ridiculous, she thought, as she picked her feet up and, with both eyes wide open, walked over to the stick. The test had only 1 prominent line. Rachel crumpled to the floor. The tears that came were as fresh as the ones that flowed each month before. In the last few years, Rachel had suffered 3 miscarriages. At least before each pregnancy ended, she had a couple weeks of hope and happiness. When did 30 become too late to start a family? Was she wrong to want to spend a few years alone with Brett as a couple? Did I do things in my youth that I'm paying for now? How was she to have known it would be this hard to get pregnant? Especially since her mother had told her she'd gotten pregnant with Rachel without even trying. Rachel had always wanted at least 2 children, so her kid would have a sibling, so they'd never be as lonely as she was. She was close to her parents, but she wished she had a sister to confide in. A sister who would have kept her company when her parents went out of town. A sister who would have snuck her dessert when she didn't finish her cauliflower. A sister who would cry with her when she miscarried another baby. Rachel couldn't control the negative thoughts. She blamed herself for not being able to have a baby and wondered if Brett might blame her also if he knew everything. That feeling of failure had followed her everywhere, even to work. Now she was so lost in her grief that she wasn't the same dynamic, cheerful teacher her previous students had. It didn't help that some of the parents were always on her, complaining about something. "Why isn't my son reading yet? Why can't you help my daughter make friends? Couldn't they just be happy they have kids? I would give anything to have one, even if they were dim-witted and ate their own hair," Rachel thought. "Those parents don't have to live in my shoes with disappointment and sadness every month. They get to bask in those little arms wrapping around them." One mother even asked if Rachel wanted to babysit on the weekends. When Rachel declined, the woman was stunned. Rachel loved her students, but it would have hurt even more to see them in their cozy homes playing with the toys she wished she could get her own child, or seeing them smile when they ate their favorite dessert. She picked her phone up off the floor and sent a 1-word text. "Nope." Even though Brett tried to hide it, Rachel hated seeing the disappointment on his face when he came home. They had been going through the same routine for so long they were both a little numb. Even the hug he gave her every month now felt robotic. The next text she sent was to her mother. Seconds after the text was sent, her phone rang. Her mother wanted to comfort her, but she couldn't talk to anyone at that moment. Rachel left the bathroom and walked by the only empty room of the house. Now she wondered if she'd painted those walls and bought a crib, would there already be a baby quietly sleeping in it? These were the thoughts that crashed through her head like a cannonball every minute of every day, especially at night when she couldn't sleep. Rachel went into the kitchen for a glass of water, but after taking a sip, she knew she needed something stronger. It wasn't like she was pregnant. She climbed on a step stool, reached into an upper cabinet, and grabbed Brett's bottle of Johnny Walker. She filled a glass halfway, gazed at the orangish liquid, then put her nose in and took a whiff. How could Brett drink this stuff, she wondered. Well, I'm about to find out. She stuck her tongue in the glass and felt a slight burning sensation, then a weird warmth coated her throat. She couldn't decide if she liked it or not, but she was willing to have more to figure it out. Rachel took one more sip, then put the bottle back on the counter and rubbed her aching eyes. She knew they were red from crying, which had become their normal state most of the time. She smoothed her hands over her hair, which needed to be cut badly. Her wavy amber mane had gotten so full she looked like a shrub with eyes, and her skin, with its normal peach undertones, was often blotchy and washed out. Even her gray sweatshirt was drab. In fact, everything about her felt drab. Brett announced himself with the jangling of keys in the door and the stomping of boots on their front doormat. He did that every time he came home, trying to get the dirt and mud from the construction site off before entering their clean house. She wasn't surprised he would find a reason to come home early. "Hey," he said gingerly. "Hey." She tried to smile, but felt her lips curling down and her teeth not able to make an appearance. She couldn't even convince her face to pretend she was okay. "I would say I'll try to cheer you up, but I think that's what Johnny Walker is for." Rachel couldn't help but let out a small laugh, and then she whacked him gently on the butt. I don't know how you drink this stuff, she said, swallowing hard. He took the glass from her. Like this. He took a gulp, then put the glass down and took her in his arms. She stood on her toes and put her head on his chest. After a moment, he lifted her face to his and kissed her lightly on the lips. She looked into his eyes. No matter how sad Rachel was, looking at him still took her breath away. His face, a golden brown from working outside every day, was decorated with a spattering of freckles like a Jackson Pollock painting. Rachel noticed a few new frown lines that had emerged between his eyebrows. She wondered if she were the cause of them. It's going to be okay, he said. She'd stopped believing him a while back. 2 years ago, when Rachel first didn't get pregnant, Brett would come home with a dozen roses to cheer her up. She knew he was trying so hard, even though he was disappointed also, he wanted to do anything to make her happier. We can adopt if things don't work out, he would say, hoping it would comfort her. But the thought of not ever getting to be pregnant made Rachel twitch with anxiety. What do you want to do for dinner? He asked. Rachel shrugged. She couldn't make any decisions about food at that moment. He kissed her and then ordered from her favorite Italian place down the street. Brett dropped his jacket over the back of a kitchen chair. His navy and white plaid shirt looked just as clean as it did in the morning when he put it on. Those were the perks of being the boss. When the food arrived, Brett placed styrofoam containers of Caesar salad, mushroom risotto, and linguine bolognese on the table. Rachel grabbed plates, napkins, and silverware. Brett dished out a little of everything on each of their plates. While Rachel ate a small spoonful of mushroom risotto, Brett took a big bite of linguine. How was your day? She asked, trying to swallow the creamy, cheesy substance, but the lump in her throat made it difficult. Good. I booked a big job in Malibu for next month. Brett had been a general contractor for 10 years. Rachel was happy for him, even if her voice didn't express that. Brett grabbed a beer while Rachel tried to stab one of the croutons in the Caesar salad, but she kept missing. She gave up and picked it up with her fingers. How was your day? He asked, wiping his mouth with a napkin. You mean besides finding out that my body still hates me? Yes, besides that, he said facetiously. One of the things Rachel appreciated about him was the way he used humor to try to make her feel better, even when it didn't work. I think you should leave me and find someone who can give you a baby. What about Martha from the dry cleaner? Rachel said, mostly jokingly. She's in her 60s. She likes you. I've seen her sneaking you coupons. Brett looked into her eyes. You will never get rid of me. I love you too much, he said with sincerity. Besides, if things didn't work out with Martha, I'd have to find another dry cleaner. Ha, ha. Brett took her hand. I know we'll have the family we both want. We're going through a tough time, but I'm not going anywhere. She forced the corners of her mouth up into a half smile. Chapter 2. Katie. Katie's legs ached from kneeling on the sturdy hardwood. She wished God provided cushions for the pews. Why did she need to suffer for the Lord to get his point across? She had discovered the Holy Congregational Church when she moved to Los Angeles from Arizona. As soon as she got settled in her apartment, she searched for a church nearby, a church she could feel at home in. When she saw how the sun filtered through the stained glass at Holy Congregational and made the Virgin Mary's hair shine, it reminded her of how safe she felt when she used to go to church with her dad. Today, Father George was giving a sermon about St. Dimphna. St. Dimphna was canonized in 1247 as the patron saint of mental disorders. I didn't realize crazy went back that far in history, she thought. As the priest continued to read from the gospel, Katie had a flash of sitting in church with her mother when she was 10 years old. Her father was gone by then, and the sermon that day was about honoring your parents. She remembered trying to listen while looking at her mother, who was slumped over in the next seat, her eyes barely open. Katie was wondering if anyone else could smell the booze emanating from her mother's pores, until she saw the look of disgust from the elderly woman on the other side of her mother. Father George gave communion, then recited the prayer of St. Thomas Aquinas. Lastly, he looked up at the whole congregation. "Peace be with you," he said. "And with your spirit," the congregation responded. Men, women, and bored children of every age stood and filed out. The scampering of feet and the chatter of kids begging to go for pancakes echoed throughout the church. Katie shuffled her feet slowly as she was stuck behind a flock of people waiting to say goodbye to the priest who was standing at the exit. When it was Katie's turn, Father George greeted her. "Hello, Katie. I'm pleased you come to church on Sundays. Most young people don't make the time." Father George's white hair and beard matched his collar perfectly. "Thank you, Father. Have you given any more thought to joining our women's group? I think you'd find our community very welcoming." Katie wondered if Father George felt sorry for her. She was always alone, but at 32 and unmarried, she didn't think she'd have anything in common with the women in the group who all seemed to have a gaggle of kids. Katie fidgeted, crossing her legs, then moved her weight from one leg to the other. She probably looked like she had to pee, but the pressure was getting to her. She also had to pee, but that was beside the point. Father George had never asked about her family, which was good because Katie would have been too ashamed to talk about them. No one in Los Angeles knew the truth except her best friend, Sandra. "I'll think about the group," Katie told Father George, "but work's been kind of busy lately." When a woman in a Laura Ashley dress that seemed to have forgotten to travel forward through time called to Father George, Katie saw her chance to hit daylight. As she was about to cross the threshold, the priest called out to her, "I hope you'll bake something for the church fair." "Of course," she said. She was never one to turn down a direct request from the clergy. She wouldn't want to disappoint anyone who might know God better than she did. Then she left alone the same way she came in. When Katie got home, she was too tired to eat. All that praying and kneeling and promising to be a good person had worn her out. She slipped off her shoes without untying them and fell into her beige chenille couch, reaching under her butt to pull out the TV remote. As she watched 25 men vying for the Bachelorette's admiration, she wondered if the show's producers would think at 32 she was too old to have that many men competing for her. Her biggest regret was that she'd wasted years waiting for her college boyfriend to propose. On her 28th birthday, she was sure he was going to finally get on one knee, but instead he broke up with her. He'd spent the whole day talking about the future and what he wanted out of life. She hadn't realized he was talking only about his future. Note to self, if a man lets you do his laundry but forgets your anniversary, he's not going to marry you. After the show's final makeout session, Katie was starving. She pulled out leftover rotisserie chicken. When she'd cooked it, she couldn't remember. She stuck her nose in the container and it smelled fine. She stood in front of the refrigerator with the door open, tearing pieces off it like a lion going to town on an antelope. An advantage to being single was there wasn't anyone judging her. The disadvantage was that Katie had no one to cook for. After devouring one chicken leg, she uncorked a bottle of Sauvignon Blanc and took a swig right from the bottle. When she pulled the bottle away from her lips, the wine splashed down the front of her shirt. What bachelor wouldn't find a hot chicken stuffing wino sexy? Katie yanked the shirt over her head, carried it to her room, and threw it in the hamper. She picked up the pajamas that were still on the floor. As she slipped on her nightshirt with Keith Urban's face on the front, she looked down at herself, wondering what men thought when they saw her. She tried to be objective, but how many people were when it came to themselves? She was blessed with hazel eyes, which could look light brown or shades of green or blue, depending on what she was wearing. Her blonde hair was thick and straight. She was not tall, not short, and slim, but in Los Angeles there were thousands of women who looked just like her. Katie was not going to give in to getting plastic surgery, even if someday she could afford it. Although, she thought it was funny how men in Los Angeles thought women were pretty when they were less expressive than a mannequin. When Katie was in her 20s, she was sure by now she would have been married with 3 kids, but finding a guy who would stick around had not been easy. A psychologist might say that she was attracted to men like her father, but Katie thought she was just a bad luck magnet. The men she usually fell for were not the healthiest or the nicest. They take her to happy hour, order 4 drinks, then leave her with the bill. Or they'd try to sleep with her after she met them the first time for coffee. No amount of espresso would make that happen. One guy even greeted her with a full-on tongue kiss the first time they met. She didn't require much, but she wanted to get to know the guy before he started licking the inside of her mouth. The last guy she'd agreed to go out with wanted to do something different. Katie suggested they go axe throwing. He thought it was a great idea, but after bragging on the phone for the 5th time that he was going to whip her ass, she canceled, worried that she'd accidentally cut parts of him off. "Katie, you're so beautiful and smart and funny," exclaimed the older women at the fertility clinic where she worked as a medical assistant. They couldn't believe she didn't have men falling all over her. At the same time, they'd claim she was lucky because she didn't have to dote on a husband who lost his phone 3 times a day or cut her only night out short to pull one of her earrings out of her kid's nose. Whenever they made those comments, Katie would shake her head and think, "Don't you know how lucky you are? You have people who love you and keep you company at night, and I go to bed with a book and a piece of dark chocolate." When Katie hadn't been on a date in 6 months, her best friend Sandra convinced her to set up a profile on a new dating app. The other apps Katie had tried were filled with weirdos, so she jumped on this one, hoping the nutcases hadn't found it yet. She and Sandra ran around town taking pictures of Katie in different outfits. 1 minute Katie was dressed in a shimmering navy dress as if she were going to a New Year's Eve party. The next she was in denim shorts and a canary yellow tank top sitting at the beach. That day was more fun than Katie thought she would have on any of the dates. Katie had been on the app for 1 month, but the only messages she'd received were from men who thought her name must have been Ms. Sexy, Ms. Hot, or Ms. I Hope You Have Nice Boobs. How men couldn't understand what a turnoff that was, she didn't understand. Would they be offended if she texted back, "I hope your penis is big"? One night, Katie found her favorite movie, Pretty Woman, on TV. Now that was a love story. She would have gone out with Richard Gere in 1 second if he weren't married and in his 70s. As the opening credits started, Katie opened her laptop and found she had new messages from men on the dating app. This should be fun, she thought. She cringed as she scrolled through the men who'd messaged her. Icky, strange, disgusting, not even on my deathbed. Where is my Richard Gere? She was about to give up when one message caught her eye. A man named Adam had written, "Hi, I'm not big on these dating apps, but you caught my attention. I like your pictures." He was cute in a slightly geeky way. He had a heart-shaped face, a warm smile, and his hair, the color of gingerbread, was parted on the side and brushed over one eye. That was the cute part. His black, oval-shaped glasses that were too big for his face were the slightly geeky part. In his next picture, he was hiking with friends without his glasses, and Katie saw more of the cute guy and less of the geeky one. "At least he doesn't look like he'd drag me by my hair into his cave," Katie said to her cat, Mr. Morrison. She picked Mr. Morrison up and put him in her lap, clicked on Adam's profile, and read it out loud to the cat. "So, it says he's not looking for a hookup. He's only interested in women who want a long-term relationship. What do you think? Would you go out with him if you were gay and a person?" Mr. Morrison purred loudly and nuzzled into her arm. "I'll take that as a yes." Katie wrote back to Adam. Hi, I like your pictures too. You've a nice smile. She hoped she wasn't being too forward, then decided she didn't care. She hit the send button, then went into the kitchen for a glass of water. When she got back, she tapped her fingers rhythmically on the side of the glass until she got a message back. Thanks. I hate putting pictures of myself on there, but it didn't seem right to put up pictures of Brad Pitt. Huh. Katie breathed a sigh of relief that he didn't call her sexy or babe or tell her he was the one to rock her world. A sense of humor was something she always looked for in a man. Katie wrote back, I don't like putting pictures of myself up here either. I had to take so many shots just to find one I liked. I can't believe I just admitted that to him, she said to Mr. Morrison, who was licking parts of himself he could barely reach. Adam wrote back, I love that you're so honest. It's one of my favorite qualities in a woman. Katie laid down on the couch with a pillow propped up behind her head. Mr. Morrison had finished bathing himself and curled up on her legs, his warmth wrapping around her like a fleece blanket. She had her laptop on her stomach as she typed out, I saw in your profile that you like old movies. I'm a huge fan of Hepburn and Tracy. Desk Set is a great movie. They messaged every few minutes after that until he asked if he could call her, and she agreed to give him her number. He called seconds after her message went through. They talked for what seemed to Katie like a short while, but had been 2 hours. It was now after midnight, and she had to work early the next morning. When she told him she had to get some sleep, he asked if she'd be up for meeting him that Friday night at 8 o'clock at the Formosa Cafe in West Hollywood. The Formosa Cafe was an old Hollywood staple that opened in 1939 and was still trendy with the young chic crowd. Katie had the looks of someone hip, but didn't have the money or the attitude. She thought of herself as a small-town girl, but for the right guy, she could pretend to be cool. When Katie got to work the next day, she found Sandra in the file room. The room was small, yet every wall had shelves filled with women's stories. Each file could break your heart, but there were so many successful pregnancies that Katie felt grateful to be a small part of bringing these women joy. Sandra, can I borrow an outfit? Sandra's mom had been a fashion designer, and Sandra grew up wearing the latest runway styles before they were out in stores. Sandra's eyes lit up. Ooh, this is my favorite kind of project. What's the occasion? I'm going on a date with a guy I met online. That's great. Is he cute? Sandra pulled out a file from the wall and scanned it. Yes, but not so cute that I'd worry women would be falling all over him. Sounds perfect. I knew a great guy would find you. Sandra wrote a note in a file, then handed it to Katie to put back as she grabbed another. Yeah, well, I'm going to reserve judgment until I'm sure Adam isn't some 60-year-old guy using his son's pictures. One of the doctors came into the file room, and Katie, not wanting to look like what she was doing, which was not working, asked if she could help him find something. He gave her a name, she handed the file to him, and he left. Where's this guy taking you? Sandra asked. Formosa Cafe. Katie sat on a step stool that was pushed up to the file cabinet. She shouldn't have worn her new boots to work. The day had just started and her toes were already rubbing against the leather. You have to wear my Dolce & Gabbana dress on your date. It would really compliment your figure. He's going to think I'm from wealth. What medical assistant can afford a designer dress unless she's like you and has a mother who shows her love with money? Sandra put her arms out with her palms open and shrugged as if to say she was okay with it. Besides, I don't know if I can pull that dress off. You could pull off a newspaper hat and a jumpsuit made of Burger King wrappers. When this guy sees you in that dress, he's going to want to whisk you away to a tropical island. I'm just hoping for a second date. I'm not you. I don't have men falling all over themselves to go out with me. And I don't know what to say in every situation the way you do. Plus, look at you. Your face looks like a computer program picked out every feature. Sandra pushed a honey brown curl out of her eyes and smacked her full lips, which were as pink as strawberry ice cream. The medical practice had gotten bigger and
sample complete. Ready to continue?